Your lines are now bridged.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to our first IFP Task Force meeting of the year here. Happy to have you join us. We will officially call the meeting to order, starting with roll call. Ken Kawamoto?
Here.
Stephen Lane?
Good morning.
Anil Jain?
Good morning.
Arian Malik? Is Arian joining? Not yet. Okay. Andy Truscott? Not yet. Clem McDonald? No Clem. Cynthia Fisher?
Here.
Good morning. David McCauley?
Here.
Edward Jun?
Here.
Terry O'Malley?
Here.
Les Leonard? Jack Poe? Raj Watwani? Ram Sharam? Ricky Bloomfield?
Good morning, I'm here.
Good morning, Sasha Termont?
Here.
Scott Weingarten? Carol Turney? Tamer Fakowry?
Here, good morning.
Tina Esposito? Valerie Gray? And Victor Lee?
Here, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Okay, we'll circle back to the roster a little bit later. At this point, I will turn it over to our co-chairs, Stephen Lane and Ken Kawamoto.
Well, good morning, everyone, and Happy New Year to you, and thank you for joining us this morning. We have two primary issues we'd like to work through today. The first is to review, once again, the draft recommendations that we've put together for orders and results, as well as closed-loop referrals and care coordination. And we've made some edits based on your and others' feedback, and we want to just make sure that we run those by the task force to get your input and hopefully finalize these for our work from last year and have them ready for our future work to write them into a report back to the ONC. And then we wanted to revisit the other domains to discuss how we want to focus our time over the rest of our work together over the coming months. We anticipate that we probably have time to dive deeply into two or three more domain areas. And while we did discuss and ballot some priority areas when we met initially last year, other issues have come forward, both suggested by the ONC and issues that I think have really been coming up in the community at large. And we wanted to revisit that and hopefully end the meeting with a clear prioritized list of domains that we're going to work on next, so we can then prepare the first of those for our meeting in 2 weeks. For those in the public, just before we opened the lines, we were discussing briefly the possibility of having the task force meet in person during the HIMSS meeting for our February meeting, and we'll be sorting through that later. Ken, do you want to add anything to the introduction?
No, sounds good.
Excellent. In that case, I think what we'd like to do is bring up the draft recommendations for orders and results. And what you'll see in here is that we have, and I think that's probably about as, if we can maybe make it a tiny bit bigger, maybe just focus.
Maybe
can we have everyone mute their lines, please, if you're not talking?
Sounds like somebody's on a train.
Yes, but it went away. Thank you.
Well, I hope they get to their destination safely. And then maybe just slide slightly to the right so we can just, we'll lose column A and we can see B, C, and D more clearly. That should do it. So again, what we have here is, maybe shrink it to 110%, and we can get it all in there. What we have is some additions in green and some subtractions in red. And then I saw that Sasha at least had inserted some commentary on some of the fields. But again, what we wanted to do is maybe just go row by row and see if people have questions or concerns. You are all, again, invited to review all this before our meeting today. So hopefully you've had a chance to think that through. So Sasha, I see Jack also has a comment on here. So maybe since Jack and Sasha, it looks like you guys took the time to enter comments. Do you want to share your thoughts with us here?
Sure. So this is Sasha. Mine was, I think, simply a quick clarification. In 2D, which is the policy levers responsibility cell, the final row actually indicates a certification requirement. And it seemed to me that this was still talking about CLIA certification of labs, but I wanted to be sure that that was what was intended and maybe add a word to confirm. Am I understanding it correctly?
Yeah, I believe that's right, that is what we were talking about. So you're saying just add the words at the end for laboratories.
Yes.
Any objection to anybody for that? Great. I'm capturing that now. I'm doing a little on the fly editing, and I'll put that in the green color so that we can clarify that. And
this is David.
David,
just a question: does condition of payment apply to labs? Is that the right term? I thought condition of payment. Well, I'll admit I initially read it as condition of participation, but I see now condition of payment. I don't know
I don't know I don't think that's a formal term, the way the condition of certification is, so we don't have it capitalized.
Yeah, I don't know if anybody can hear me yet, but
there you go.
Hey, great. So, both payment and certification would apply. Labs are regulated through CLIA, and it's actually possible through ONC's regulatory power that ONC could actually regulate the health IT that's used in labs. They haven't exercised that option yet. And then clearly labs are paid by CMS, so conditions of payment would apply under CMS's power as a paying entity. So I think those are three appropriate certification, both under CLIA and under ONC, are appropriate levers as is potentially the much larger stick in condition of payment.
And would that also be condition, this is Cynthia, of condition of participation as well as COP for payment?
Right.
Should we say both? Again, we're talking about the biggest stick, but the point here is that we are saying that this is so important that we think big stick should be available. So should we say the condition of certification and or payment for laboratories?
And I also think we need condition of participation, which also relates to quality and value as another leverage and stick.
Anyone object to that? I think the point we're making here is that we think that all available means should be utilized as necessary to assure that this coding is done at the source.
Yeah, this is David. I think that's the point to get across, not to worry too much about which technical regulatory word is used. As Arian pointed out, it's both CLIA and ONC certification levers are available, potentially available.
And we also have Medicare and Medicaid levers through COPs, which is the condition of participation. Quality and safety.
Does that apply to labs?
Yes.
All right. I've captured that. We want to keep moving. Any other concerns about this row one? Again, most of the changes were fairly nuanced, but they were suggested by by folks who were involved in the review. Jack, did you have a comment that you wanted to share on row C here?
Yeah, I just wanted to make a quick comment. So many lab tests still have different normal and abnormal values. I think it would be important to have that as part of the standards, because otherwise it would get very confusing when we're interpreting labs from other providers.
We absolutely included that, and in fact, Clem did highlight that, and we made an add. I don't think it was in this row. I think it was lower down. But yes, the normal abnormal values are absolutely included here. Thanks. Okay, let's go down to row three. Not all results are sent to clinicians in codified format with the necessary metadata. This, I think, is where that goes, because it is a metadata issue. Here again, we cleaned up a few extraneous words, and there you go. Perfect. And added some clarifications. But we do have at the bottom of column C here, we do say require that resulting agencies provide standardized metadata, including methodology, units, normal range, abnormal flags, et cetera, as applicable. So that's where that was captured.
I think we make a point. Yeah, I think we make the point later on about provenance, but you could consider that to be a kind of metadata. So I just want to make sure that my memory is right, that we mention it somewhere else. Yeah, we have it down in a lower row. Okay. In other words, it's not only to understand the metadata to interpret the test, but to know exactly which instance of the test you're dealing with, so that you don't think you've seen it before when you haven't, or vice versa.
Yes, and David, you added specific reference to the idea of supporting the reference IDs, and we've added that at the end, so we'll get down to that.
Good.
Sasha, you had a comment here in column D.
Can I ask a somewhat tactical question? So a lot of the things that were suggested relies on things like LOINC and SNOMET CT, which is not actually administered in the U.S. or by an official U.S. body. In order for a lot of this to happen without folks sort of falling off the bandwagon, are you guys, it might be important to actually suggest that we either play a much bigger role or potentially take over some of the responsibilities of those organizations? Because I know in the past, folks have tried to do this, and the problem was that basically those organizations wasn't fast enough and folks started forking.
Who's that speaking?
Oh, sorry, this is Jack.
Oh, great, sorry. Don't quite have your voice down yet. Yeah, I think it's an interesting thought. I don't know that we're really in a position to recommend to ONC that they change the responsibility related to the work of SNOMED. You know, our task as a task force was really to identify the standards that apply and comment on them. Do others share Jack's concern? That we certainly did talk to the folks from LOINC, and they expressed to us personally that they felt comfortable with their ability to keep up with these requirements.
Yeah,
not reached out to SNOMED.
This is a case where, in many cases, the LOINC subsets, clearly LOINC is set up for this, and in many cases, both the LOINC and SNOMED subsets are available for this case and aren't applicably or aren't used in all cases. Also, NLM has, the U.S. federal government generally has standing on ITSEDU as well as with LOINC, so there are federal participation, both through the agencies and at the administrative level on both of these agencies. But really what we're calling for isn't so much the creation and curation of new codes, although that's clearly required from time to time, but the actual use of the codes that are currently created.
But this is David. It's not out of the question to urge proper funding of these entities so that they can generate timely updates. I think they're sometimes limited by funding.
Sure.
And that could be a role for the government. We don't need to reinvent SNOMED, please, but we can continue to fund that, and LOINC probably is in more of need than SNOMED.
So Sasha introduced a comment regarding our suggestion around the topped-out metric for electronic laboratory receipt, her point being that that this is something that is outside of the control of the providers, and therefore, on some level, it doesn't make sense to hold the providers responsible. Having said that, you know, data could be collected through MIPS to inform decision-making and policy-making around the desirability of moving this data. But Sasha, your final suggestion was to actually consider removing that third-to-last bullet about the electronic laboratory receipt in the MIPS payment program. Do you want to add to that?
Yeah, no, I think you did a great job of summarizing. I know from extensive experience with previous MIPS or meaningful use measures that the further a provider is from directly being able to impact a measure, the more frustration and problematic the measures have become. If there's a clear provider action that they can take to improve a particular outcome, a measure seems to work well. In this case, if a provider is contracted with a laboratory that is not sending results with the metadata that would be ideal, there's probably indirect things that maybe the provider's organization can do in terms of lab contracting when it's next up for renewal, or considering, you know, different agreements with other labs. But that's pretty distant from an individual MIPS participant. And it wouldn't be like every time you get a lab action that they would do it. It would be like a, you know, once a year sort of contracting consideration. So I don't think it makes a good MIPS measure. I think if we want to gather data on the current state, there's maybe a better method, because I feel like it's ill-suited to the sort of MIPS mechanism that's proposed there.
Isn't this a numerator-denominator problem? So I think what we're calling for here isn't that a provider should be responsible in cases where the lab doesn't have the standards-based result reporting available, but that in cases where the lab does have standards-based result reporting available, the provider should be held responsible for using standards-based results reporting. This is an ecosystem problem, and if people are topped out on an electronic receipt mechanism, but that electronic receipt mechanism is falling short in the ways that the task force has already articulated, and the standards in question actually address many of the clinical concerns that this task force has articulated, I think what we're asking for is driving a little more of an ecosystem-based approach. So that would be the intent of a certification measure. And then the way to address the problem, Sasha, that you note, is a numerator-denominator issue where you have exclusions that are available for labs that just don't report out in a standard-based way.
I don't know how to construct the denominator for that measure, Arian. And I think it would be significantly problematic from a reporting perspective. But so I guess if that is the intent, I think we'd need to definitely refine the text there so that that intent would be understood by others reading it. You know, I don't know that I understood that from what was in the bullet point. And I still, I guess, have reservations that in terms of all of the things that we could measure and the complexity and cost associated with measuring them, defining the denominator in that case is quite hard. The numerator of when you got all the metadata is easy. The denominator of when you could have gotten metadata but didn't is very hard. There might be cheaper measurements like just all lab results and when you have metadata that we could use for monitoring across the industry without the overhead of including such a measure in MIPS.
What do you think of the language that I put in there just now, which is a slight modification, Sasha, of what you suggested?
I don't understand how it works in MIPS, frankly. A MIPS is a provider-based program. I don't know how to define it in a way that a provider would be meaningfully making a difference about what is theirs, so I guess I'm still puzzled.
So did you see my language? Consider a new measure for MIPS around how frequently results received with associated metadata are integrated into the local medical record.
What is the denominator of that measure, Stephen?
Results received with associated metadata.
And what's the numerator?
When those results are integrated into the medical record.
What's the difference between receiving a result and integrating the result?
Yeah, I think that's going to be tricky with labs.
I see what's happening.
I mean, a lot of them are automatically integrated.
Right. Yeah, automatic is fine, right? Maybe we should even say automatically integrated.
But is the problem we're trying to solve here the automatic integration, or is the problem that we know there's some quantifiable amount of times where we're not receiving the metadata that's desired?
Right. I think Sasha's point, which is it is a good one, is that constructing the numerator denominator in cases where the lab has available the standards-based report but isn't sending it, or that the EHR isn't requesting it or isn't set up and configured to request it, that's a problem that requires somebody on the back end to do some manual work to construct the numerator denominator rather than something that the EHR can construct automatically on behalf of the provider. So it drives at least some level of administrative complexity in order to administer the method, the measure. The larger point, so I think it's appropriate to note that. I think the larger point that in cases where the lab has made available, let me just back up. As I think people remember, when we rolled out electronic lab reporting as a measure under meaningful use, part of the perspective is that if the EHR is already receiving information electronically, that we aren't going to require them to go back and retrograde and upfit. Retrofit. And I think what we're running into is that in many cases, EHRs are not using the state of the art that's available through the lab, or the lab doesn't have any incentive or isn't driving any behavior from the provider to go upgrade that or ask the lab for using a standards-based interface. And then in those cases, as the task force documented, there are infelicities, there are issues that the latest standards address that aren't addressed by the in-situ lab reports. That's really the conundrum we're trying to address, and I really do take Sasha's point that this may be too blunt an instrument.
My thinking is that if we want to put something in MIPS, it should be something that providers could be making a difference on action by action. And I don't know that I see this here. So I don't know that MIPS is the right mechanism, though I certainly think that there's other steps that are very useful to be taking.
So what I'm hearing, and again, in the interest of time, there's a lot we want to accomplish today, is to go ahead and remove this line that begins reconsider top-down nature and leave it at that.
Stephen,
I'm okay.
Objection?
Nope.
This is Cynthia. Stephen, the question I have, and this is just from a layperson's standpoint, from a consumer side, is ensuring that the laboratory data is in machine-readable format that would be analyzable, be accumulated, and trended over applicable by any open API to provide analysis, and then also access to the end. I just was, from a consumer's hat, as we look at these, I just also just want to flag the need to have access to this, their own data and the accumulated data as a comparison to Know the Norm, but in light of it being also free of charge and analyzable and readily accessible to the patient.
Yeah, and I think we cover that in our first bullet, clearly specifying that this is for providers and patients. So thank you, Cynthia. I think, yeah, we've really kept that very much at the forefront as we've gone through this. In fact, the next row is about just that, making results available to patients and proxies to effectively view, receive, and utilize. So here again, some minor changes to the language. Sorry, I didn't get the color coding quite right.
Hey, Steve, this is Clem. I got on late, but the screen is really small.
Clem. We're trying to be able to see each row of a piece. I don't know what we can do and still keep it moving at a reasonable clip here.
Or just
the feature maximized. There's a light icon at the bottom right of the screen that's displaying if you have it where you can still see who's participating, et cetera. It should allow you to maximize, I think.
The other option is to just look directly at the Google Doc because you're updating that in real time, and you can see that and zoom that to your heart's content.
Yeah, so Clem, I think we need to keep it where it is, and hopefully on your end you can,
okay.
You can see
Well, I'd like to bring in two other things. The business about Tapped Out is completely wrong, and there was letters from the laboratory industry documenting how it was wrong. So I think we don't let go of that. It wasn't Tapped Out. It wasn't close to Tapped
Right.
Out.
The point was more that it really wasn't in the control of the provider themselves to be able to change that. So we're leaving that on the laboratories, and I think we've been very strong about their requirements.
And there's one other point about a big distinction. So the commercial labs, by and large, do a good job. They code it. They have pretty decent structures, and the hospitals, by and large, do a lousy job. And it's ironic because the commercial labs are not under the power of HIPAA. So that's something we should really emphasize. And I don't think we have to have the latest, greatest standard, V2 on up. If they put the codes in there, it will work just fine, and everybody can translate them. So the emphasis should be on getting the good structure in one of the more recent standards and getting the hospital, put pressure on the hospital lab deliveries.
Yeah, and we do include all resulting agencies, specifying whether it's a hospital, whether it's a provider's office or a laboratory.
Okay.
We call
the hospitals are 60% of the volume these days.
Right.
Especially as the doctor's practices are self-referring within the hospital systems. Could I add on to this patient aspect that I don't see anywhere that this data should be free of charge to the patient? I mean, they should be able to get these results, analyzable and free of charge, and I don't think we're very clear about that.
I think that's built in some of
the that addition.
No, I think that's already in available. We just emphasize it. I think we've said that in some official standard, not we. But HIPAA or one of the regulations say that.
Yeah, I think we need to be clear. I think it has to be the data is available free of charge, but might not be accessed free of charge. We can say mute on access, but there are reasons why access there might be a charge for, but the actual availability is free. Does that make sense?
But no, I don't think it makes sense because, the issue is this, that this patient has paid for the medical service. And it's like when we go to the bank, we don't, pay for our electronic access of what our bank balance is or the price in the grocery store. So we really need to put this into a market economy where the laboratory, the name and the data, the information that's critical to the patient's health and is paid for by the patient, their copay, their deductible, their taxes, and their medical insurance, four times it's paid for, is still not accessible to the patient. So we really need to make this data accessible because it's about quality and safety of their health.
Just to confirm the current regulatory state, OCR, the administrative body for HIPAA, has confirmed, number one, that in cases where an electronic format is readily available and is requested by the patient, in all cases under HIPAA, the provider has to provide effectively at cost, and we're talking about a case where the marginal cost is pretty close to zero. Number two, OCR has also confirmed that patients have the right under HIPAA to access their lab information, and that that's a HIPAA access right. So I think both of these cases of API requiring providers to make available an API is addressed under both MIPS and meaningful use. The cost and access issues have clear guidance under OCR, and then patient access to labs has also clear guidance under OCR. Whether all those things are happening the way that OCR intended in practice is an enforcement issue, not so much, I think, a policy issue, although it's worthwhile just to reconfirm the policy goal, as Cynthia notes.
No, that's how I remember it.
And to clarify,
all
you,
right.
You can go directly to the lab, which that's what the reg says, not just getting lab results through your doctor. You can go directly to the lab and get them.
Although I think you're
so
allowed,
you can
the
see
lab's
that
allowed to charge
I did make.
The,
I did make an addition, Cynthia, in the second line there, free of charge. Does that feel right?
Thank you.
That's not the policy, though, is it?
It's listed as a recommendation.
Are we really saying free of charge, or if HIPAA is saying basically at cost, electronically, it should be close to free, but...
This is the ordering provider.
Okay, but as the patient gets access to their care, it's being, you could actually consider it information blocking, because when patients are held up to get access to the data and for a cost on something that has essentially no cost, we're really hurting the system. So I think wherever we can be overt about, you know, delivering this, because the patient has already paid for that service, this is their result.
If we qualify that saying they got the electronic data free of cost, I think the concern is if they have to Xerox 500 pages, there could be a cost. I think that would work if we qualify it by electronic data, not all their data in any form.
Well, you know, I think that I think the one thing that's going to happen is if it's free of charge to the patient to get their information, you know, when we go in a restaurant, we get a menu and we're not charged to look at the menu and get the prices and the what we're ordering. So I think the same applies to the patient. So I think this game playing of charging and withholding access, we have an opportunity to change it in our recommendations. And I just would strongly encourage us to be practical, because it has been paid for and then some.
So one way to approach this, if I may, in the second bullet, we say make all results in the EHR available to patients via APIs. We could say make all results available electronically. I guess if it's in the EHR, it's electronic, but it does... We got the problem of scanned results, but making these available, we could add the free of charge to the second bullet instead of the first bullet, if that felt better.
That sounds good to me.
Well, I think a potential issue here is if there's Valley Ad folks that join in, what would this mean if this becomes policy? So, for example, if Apple makes, you know, lab information available in their, you know, Apple iOS, and in order to use it, you need to buy a device, right? Is that now not no longer free because you have to have bought an iPhone to get access?
But this is
This is about the results in the report of medical care. This is
I'm just wanting to make sure there's no unintended consequences.
You know, it's not your iPhone yet. I don't think there's unintended consequences because every other industry on the planet posts what they're providing post results, and they don't charge you for the paper and make you go through hurdles to get it. And
That's not quite true, but because if I go into my bank, you raise a good example, and I agree with you the principle entirely, okay? If I go into my bank and I can go to my banking app and I can get all my bank account information, all my statements, all my mortgage information, but if I go into my bank and say, actually, I want to have a hard copy of all my statements, so I'll say, absolutely, Mr. Truscott, not a problem at all, and we're going to charge you $1 a quarter for that. And I say, okay. But it's nominal, but there is a slight charge.
But Andy, here we're talking about the via APIs specifically.
Oh, I agree. I understand what we're talking about, and the electronic access. I think you shouldn't be charging for that, and I agree with Cynthia entirely. But where there is an incremental cost to provide that access, then that doesn't seem unreasonable, and that's what the current policy is.
Well, Steve, I think you've come up down on a good position.
Although
so
if I'm at a lab and I'm coming out, if I'm at a lab and I'm coming out with a very necessary result, are we opening the window to say I can't get a copy of that without paying for it? And it's a one-page result of my lab test. You know, I just think let them go fight about it, but I'd rather have it be free of charge and. You know, this is the result of their care and to be pushed.
Yeah.
I guess
you've made a really clear point, Cynthia. But I think we have some pushback saying that the electronic access can reasonably be expected to be free of charge via the APIs, but that trying to say that suddenly paper copies aren't going to be charged for it kind of goes beyond the reach of our group, I think.
But you're going to.
And Cynthia, it's not the issue of the lab test you got today. Someone comes in and they want their 1,000-page medical record copied because they're going to have to do a suit or something like that or whatever. I mean, those are expensive. And you know,
we have essentially the standards group, not the hard copy standards group.
It's the hard copy.
Don't we think APIs should be free? I mean, I think...
Yes, that's what we've got here.
Yes, that's
what we've got. Let's move on. We're going to get through what we need to do.
Exception here that I wanted to highlight. One thing that we've seen is that this may not... The OCR guidance may not apply to groups like LabCorp or Quest. I believe Quest was charging for electronic access to data from a consumer perspective via their website. I think it was data more than a year old, which could be a lot of data potentially. Do we want to raise that here, that would be included, or do we think that's outside the scope of this, given that they may or may not have a direct relationship with the consumer at the time the lab was performed?
I think anybody who provides this for a consumer should provide the data free of charge, the information free of charge electronically. I think we should include all entities so that nobody gets it out to play games behind the scenes.
So I think spoke up, but I would say that I'm generally supportive that it needs to be free of charge to prevent information blocking, but things like this can easily lead to unintended consequences where you block any value-added innovation completely. You can easily imagine like an EHR company figuring out how to display the data better, how to be more consumer friendly, and now they have no business model.
Yeah, I think in this case, the regulatory framework's actually already there. And in our guidance or our commentary, we should point back to that regulatory guidance that's already there that readily available standards-based formats, including HL7 FHIR, that are made available fall within HIPAA access requirements as a readily available form and format for the patient. And I believe that addresses the concerns, I believe the existing policy framework addresses the concerns stated. As I noted, there may be an enforcement issue in the sense that whether it actually works in practice the way that it is designed, and whether the policy guidance expresses is a different issue from whether the policy guidance is correct.
I think we need to be overt about it as a recommendation. I think we have an opportunity here to be very clear and be overt about it. That would be my recommendation as a big favor to Marketplace, especially as you can imagine that consumers are now having 30% are having high deductible plans. Any incremental price that's unnecessary is painful. So I think we can take the high road and add it.
I'd like to take a moment here to acknowledge that we're halfway through our meeting, and we've gotten through about 15% of what we'd hoped to accomplish. And I think this is really valuable discussion and suggests to me that we need to consider taking more time to be sure that we get these right. What I would like to propose is that we actually stop this discussion at this point, because we have a lot of really great ideas. I think, Arian, you suggested some helpful language that could be inserted here. And what I'd like to do, unless Ken, you object, would be to shift our focus to the prioritization of the coming work, because we want to be able to plan our work ahead and keep moving along while we also finalize these recommendations. So, Ken, would you feel comfortable if we kind of paused here, thought about another time to come back and really hammer through these issues, and then shift over since we do have some guests who came?
That sounds perfect. Let's come back to this one.
Okay. So thank you all for that really engaging conversation. Arian, I'm going to ask you if you can help us out with some language that you think captures the sentiment of the group here.
Absolutely.
And then what I'd like to do is shift over, if we can, back to our agenda and to bring up the list of the five domain areas that we invited you all to consider going into this discussion. And again, I apologize. I hope nobody feels cut off. We really do want to make the time to have that discussion in its full flavor. So some of these have been discussed before, specifically the evidence-based disease management, medication and pharmacy data exchange. But others have really come up through discussions that we've had here with members of the task force and others. Social determinants of health is an area that's getting a lot of attention now, and at least it seems might benefit from our engagement. Prior authorization and price transparency have both come up in the two domains that we've already addressed, but ONC in particular is interested in potentially having either the input of this task force and or the entire HITAC to weigh in, especially around prior authorization. So what we wanted to do was very briefly go through these and just clarify what they each entail, or what we think they entail. And I'm talking very brief here, no more than sort of 5 to 7 minutes on each one. And then we've invited you all to rank order them in the Google Doc. And we asked you all to do that ahead of time. And our hope is that you've done that. And then if you want to make changes as we're going through, we'd like to end up with a rank order at the end. I'm not sure we're going to be able to accomplish that. So with that, I'd like to invite Ken to discuss evidence-based disease management, which is one that he's given a lot of thought to, so we can just all understand what we're talking about here.
Sure. Thanks. I'll be fairly quick. So I propose this one since there's a lot of evidence that patients don't get all the care that they should. I think the latest evidence is around 50% of the known best care is delivered to patients in the U.S. That's, for example, Miglin's work with the RAND Corporation, I believe, in the New England Journal study. So the idea here is, you know, we've collected all this data. Much of it is electronic now. What's the purpose of it? Well, one important purpose is so that we can make sure that patients get the best care that the evidence says. And to do that, we need a few things. So I think one of them is data, if it's already collected to in electronic form, to be have it in a standard space form. So it's things like lung cancer is the number one cause of cancer deaths in the country. There's a known recommended screening program from the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force estimated to save more lives than breast cancer screening, but current national screening rates are under 5%. So the idea here is, well, let's take these other data elements, for example, what's the patient's PAC year history, and if it's collected already in structured form and it's needed for this kind of decision-making, to make it available as standard data elements. Another kind of example might be, for example, for diabetes management. You need to do monofilament foot exams to make sure that, you know, the patient's not getting desensitized in the toes and leading to ulcers and amputations. I assume that almost all EHRs are currently collecting that in structured form, but it's not in the standard way that it's being pulled out. So why don't we standardize around that? And there's, of course, related things around things such as how do you integrate into the EHR, but a lot of it, I think, would be data-driven. So that's my plug for evidence-based disease management.
And when you say put in the standard, what do you mean by that?
Yeah, so for example, with this lung cancer, smoking history, et cetera, the data elements needed would be things like when did the patient start smoking, or start date, or quit date, PAC year information. In our EHR Epic, it's all there in structured form, but it's not available in the FHIR APIs or really any other APIs. Natively, and it's not part of the US or FHIR specifications. So we actually built the interface, and we're using it in production right now for lung cancer screening purposes. And the idea here, for example, is to say if it's being collected, let's, for example, define a US or FHIR profile around the smoking, add in beyond are they a current smoker, are they a former smoker, or never smoker, that kind of information, and to likely have two aspects. To say, if you're collecting it in structured form, this is how we want it to be provided. And if you're not, and you decide to collect it, then we recommend you make it available this way. I don't think we want to get into the part of saying, hey, you should start collecting in structured form or mandate it. But I think it certainly makes sense, I think, if we're already collecting in structured form, why recommending how to make it available in a standard approach.
But Ken, these are just observations, and all you need is, well, LOINC codes or something else like it. Plus, it's a well-developed field, and it's very and there's a lot of arguments by the experts about what one should be collected. I think they have to somehow. We've got to get to that. You know, one of the values is how soon after you wake up do you have to get a smoke. That's one of the best indications of addiction. So I don't think just saying this form that one group has developed should be used. It's going to need some discussion.
Yeah, agree. At this point, but what we're saying here is we're about priority use cases. I'm just arguing that one of the priority use cases is using the data in a way that allows us to, you know, apply the best evidence. In terms of, you know, what data points are needed, you know, what should those look like, that would not be something we'd probably do in this task force. We would be recommending how that be done, because right now there is no clear pathway.
Well, I think we need to recommend some convening some groups that have expertise.
And yeah, so again, the point here, Clem, is simply to identify the issue so that then we can vote on it, not to address the issue here. So the next one we're going to discuss is to move on to social determinants of health. We did invite Al Taylor from the ONC, who's been doing a lot of work coordinating the ONC's support for this domain, and we just wanted to invite Al to very briefly discuss from his perspective what's the state of evolution of standards related to social determinants.
Yeah, thank you very much. I appreciate the invite and the opportunity to talk to this group about it. I think, as everybody knows, social determinants is a key determinant of overall health and health outcomes, and by addressing the social determinants, including intervening to improve the social needs of a patient, has a major impact on health. In fact, many folks say that it has a more important impact on overall health and health outcomes than specific clinical interventions. From a health IT standpoint, well, to just back up a little bit, there's actually a lot of instruments available to screen for a variety of social needs. The National Association for Community Health Centers has a PREPARE tool, which has very widespread use. Accountable health communities from CMMI have a new health-related social needs screening instrument, and organizations like Health Leads has a social needs screening toolkit. These are just a couple of them. There's a lot of other surveys and instruments available to assess or at least screen for the social needs. From a health IT standpoint, though, there's a big gap, because there's not only is there poor representation of all of these screening tools within healthcare vocabularies and standards, there's not a good agreement on which is the best tool to use in which setting. There's, because they're not represented using these vocabularies and coding systems, it's difficult to capture them in a way in the electronic health record that can leverage the capabilities of health IT and to make them interoperable. So you can capture them in proprietary format and not be able to exchange them in any meaningful way with another party, including the patient. There's a lot of work that's been going on about the community of these social needs screening instruments, users that have started to close the gap. And this has been occurring over the last 4 years or so since National Academy of Medicine put out their social needs report about integrating it into the health record. And as a direct result of that, ONC put social determinants into their 2015 certification rule. Also, more recently, ONC has proposed that social determinants and the elements therein be considered for inclusion, a potential inclusion in the U.S. Core Data for Interoperability. But those data are, the reason it's not been proposed as something more advanced than that is because there is such a gap between the concepts and the codes, and they're just simply not usable in health IT in any meaningful way right now. I did want to highlight a recent paper in JAMIA from, I think it was early, it was in 2018, which highlighted the gaps in three different areas of social determinants, including screening, which involves the assessments, which involves the screening instruments, assessments and diagnosis, which is more of the diagnostic codes, and then also the interventions, which are sort of the treatments for these social needs, whether it's food assistance, housing assistance, et cetera. So those three parts of social determinants they exhibit a very large gap between what's available to screen and what's available in health IT. They also published a compendium of existing codes. They did a pretty extensive scan of the existing codes in those three realms of screening, assessment, and intervention. And that actually is a published compendium through a research the research network that's really coordinating a lot of this effort in the social determinants community. So I think it would be a great being able to capture and share and use and leverage health IT around social determinants would have a I think would have a very large impact on the ability to communicate a more fuller picture of the patient and be able to use those data for improving care.
Al, could
thank
I
you so much, Al. That's really a helpful summary. And again, Clem, if I can just say, the purpose of these discussions is not to dive into these areas, but really just to clarify what is the scope of the domain that we're talking about, so that each member of the task force can prioritize these issues, so that we can determine what direction we're going.
Well, he mentioned three or four things that I was hoping we could get an email, because the real scope is not going to be evident until you start looking at the sample surveys And these are surveys, Al, really, aren't they all?
Yeah, these are essentially paper-based instruments. Most of them are pretty well validated. Some of them come from federal programs. Some of them come from private or research programs. These are validated instruments that have real scientific backing and association with outcomes, but they just can't be used in health IT right now.
But if we could get a look at them, all it would take would be choosing them right once and then asking the industry to use them. Choosing is always hard, though.
Yeah, well, choosing...
Right.
Yeah, because the particular need for a particular instrument is sometimes specific to the setting. And in some settings, it's just there may be more than one tool needed to assess for food insecurity or for housing insecurity because of the particular setting in which it's used.
Again, I think we're going deeper than we have time for today.
Yeah.
I want to move on. Thank you so much, Al. That was a great summary, and I think people understand what we're talking about here. The challenge for the task force members, hold on, the challenge for the task force members is, again, to understand the domains so that you can prioritize them. And I see that as we're going along, people are adding their priorities, which is great. So I want to get through the list so that we can maybe ask some questions at the end. So Al, if you can stay with us, that would be great.
Sure.
Cynthia, did you have something you wanted to slip in there? Yeah.
Yes, I just wondered, as we look at social determinants as a task force, just as a role of the task force, just to consider, I'm just going to tee it up as a flag for perhaps future discussion, is, you know, there's a dark side to that metadata on social determinants that can be potentially remarketed or utilized as big data on that individual for dark purposes of access. And so I just want to just tee it up to say, how do we look at it in light of transparency to the patient in knowing as it affects their privacy and as it affects the potential of them being marketed to or that data being shared, not to what their original intent was. So I just want to throw that out there.
Thank
that
you,
I think
Cynthia.
We have a response.
Yeah, if we go into that area, we'll be sure to go into that. The other three domains that we have on the table are, again, prior authorization, which, as we know, a lot of people are working hard on using different technologies, price transparency, and medication and pharmacy data. We did not invite anyone in particular to discuss these. Price transparency, Cynthia, is certainly something that you've emphasized in a number of our discussions, talking about the net cost to the patient. I think most of us do understand what that means, and there are a number of vendors who are doing some really innovative work in bringing price data all the way to the point of decision-making for clinicians. We could certainly understand what they are doing, what standards they've been utilizing, and weigh in there in terms of, over and above what we've already suggested. Prior authorization is something that really came up as a key issue and interest of the ONC after the recent ONC meetings late last year. Lauren, I know I didn't prep you for this, but did you want to comment on ONC's interest in prior authorization and where they think either this task force and or the HITECH could add value there?
Sure. I just think from the ONC perspective, there is a lot of ripe opportunity for this particular task force to address this. We know that prior auth, certainly has a tie into the ongoing work, not only of this task force, but the committee, but perhaps maybe starting with what is the kind of technical aspect of prior auth that we would like the task force to address. We also hope in upcoming broader HITECH committees to start to engage the rest of the committee in terms of what are some of their thoughts and approaches. And then as we start to continue those discussions, hopefully we can focus and narrow in for this particular task force to carry on that work. But we're certainly open to suggestions from task force members, as well as from the public, as we begin to tackle this.
Just as a comment, as sort of a placeholder comment, because I know we'll get into this if we get into the topic, but standards and systems for medical prior auth for medical claims are different in important ways from those for prior auth for pharmacy claims. And so it might be worthwhile just making sure that we keep note of that and potentially address different recommendations in each of those areas.
Thanks. That's a very valid point. I think we've already started to see, some initial guidance and recommendations, both from within the government and private sector, to help us keep that in mind. Thanks, Arian.
Oh, I see David's hand is up. David, do you still have a comment or?
Yeah, just a general comment, particularly about prior authorization and the medication and pharmacy data spaces, where there's a ton of activity underway. And I guess the broad question is, does this group think that it's worth adding to that existing conversation, or should we focus on areas that may have received less attention? I don't know. It's really what does HITECH want out of us if they want us to kind of weigh in on the existing work and, encourage the stuff that we think is doing well. And likewise, then it makes sense to take on some of these that have a lot of activity already. But it's a strategy question, really.
Yeah, David, I've reached out to Steve Posnack to ask him that very question. I haven't heard back from him, but I think you make a really good point. We are here in service of the ONC and the 21st Century Cures Act, and we want to assure that we're investing our time and energies in a way that will be most valuable.
And then
he didn't give us a directive, apparently, it sounds like.
Not yet. We're still waiting.
Okay. I could see it either way. I mean, and diving into a well-studied space and, surfacing what we think are the top ideas is certainly something we could do, but we shouldn't waste time if it's well covered by other people, other groups.
Yeah, and I think in the prior auth space in particular, the issue was that there are a lot of different efforts or a few different efforts, and just having a clear picture of where all they fit in. I think there's also potentially areas where there's some regulatory issues that prevent usage of, the latest standards apparently folks want to use in this space. And maybe looking into that was, I think, part of the intent for the prior auth part. Not to reinvent the wheel, of course, but to sort of make sense of everything that's going on and help provide recommendations for how to make them all work together. But I think we discussed prior auth and price transparency to some extent. We could discuss more on price transparency. We haven't really talked so much about medication and pharmacy data. So maybe we should discuss that as well. I think the question is, what is the scope for medication and pharmacy? And I guess in my mind, one of the areas would be, for example, medication dispense data, like PDMP data. Acknowledging that there are, for example, for PDMP, a whole specific ONC work group working on it that's doing a lot of great work. But what did folks have, what do folks think in terms of scope when they think medication and pharmacy data is a potential topic?
Yeah, Ken, this is Stephen. I'll weigh in because I think I was one of the ones who initially proposed this. One of the things as a clinician that I struggle with is discrete SIGs. That some systems support the discrete documentation of medication SIGs, but then that data gets lost when the medication data is transmitted between EHRs and pharmacy systems and comes back again. And in the absence of discrete SIGs, you can't do really detailed level decision support. You can't calculate total doses. The whole issue of morphine equivalency. Really requires discrete SIGs on controlled meds. So that was one issue that I thought was important. Obviously, if we went into meds and pharmacies, we would end up having the same kind of discussions around prior auth and price transparency that we've had with orders and results, and a little bit less so with referrals. So what's striking about this, and again, I appreciate the task force members who've gone ahead and registered their priorities on the poll that we've made available. At the moment, medication and pharmacy is ranked most highly by the task force members who have voted. So I'd be interested in hearing from folks like David, Sasha, Andy, and others, Ricky, for example, why you listed this as your top priority, what you see as beneficial here.
Yeah, this is David. I made my rankings based on what I considered to be the urgency of the domain rather than taking into account whether there was activity underway or not. You know, in absence of that clarifying statement from Steve Posnack as to how he wants the group to work. So, you know, the medication data, the PDMP issues are, you know, a hot priority, high priority. I think something like a discrete SIG is, you know, that's a decade-old debate. It's an important one. Whether we can add value or not is an open question, but it's certainly important. That's why I ranked it high. If you want to go to unexplored space, I think I would rank mine differently. I think social determinants and some of the other topics may be higher in terms of.
Well, I think the best we can suggest for the task force members at this point is I would say, what are you most interested in investing your mental energies in? Where do you think you can add the most value? Would be my suggestion, and then if we all approach this in that way, and then we can look to the ONC for guidance in making a final selection.
One reason I think this particular area is interesting is because currently consumers can get their medication data from their providers, but there's no current requirement or incentive for pharmacies, for example, to make data available via API directly to consumers, and so that isn't happening at scale, and that's something that I think could be extremely valuable, especially when it comes to dispense data, as you noted, could be very valuable for medication compliance.
It may not be the pharmacies, but I agree.
Yeah, when I ranked mine, I was thinking pretty much the same as David was. Just on that pharmacy comment, there might not be an obligation, although we'll wait and see what comes out in the two rules, which are currently, you know, waiting to be released. And when the shutdown's over, we'll see those. But all the big retail pharmacies are, you know, do provide medication dispense information out to patients, you know, whether that's a Walgreens, CVS, or a Walmart, et cetera. Given Steve Posnack's guidance, I'm actually saying, well, okay, maybe actually we should be looking at something like evidence-based disease management, where there isn't, you know, such a substantial lot of literature and work being done so far that's certainly not as far as advanced as labs and meds. That's just a thought.
Okay. And then... And just a note, we're showing here folks' votes so far. So this went out to the task force members as an email link earlier. A few folks on the call don't have votes on it. The idea here is to rank a 1, 2, 3, and we assign 5 points for one and 3 points for two and 1 point for three. If you haven't voted and haven't, please do so, or let us know how you would like us to assign your priorities. And then if you have, and, you know, based on discussion, you want to update things, please feel free to do that as well. I think what we want to do is, you know, use this as a mechanism to get to where we want to focus next.
Ken, was this an email?
I'm on the direct email you right now.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, and Ken, this is Lauren. We do have a handful of members who are absent today, so maybe we can circle back and display the full results once we've heard from those that are absent.
Yes, we can do that.
Yes,
And this is Cynthia. I'll need that too, and I'm going to have to sign off in like 10 minutes for another meeting, but I'm happy to do it after the fact.
I'm emailing you both right now. Okay, well, so right now it looks like medication and pharmacy is clearly at top of mind for folks. The others are kind of evenly distributed, which makes the decision-making a little bit harder. But I think it's clear that medication pharmacy is a priority for a lot of folks so far. Steve and others, any thoughts on how to make use of these data points, acknowledging that some other data will come in?
Yeah, I think the best we can do, since some folks didn't see the email, is to leave this open for the rest of the week to the task force members and invite people to talk amongst yourselves. To you know, we could certainly have some email discussion as needed if people want to reach out to Ken and or to me to discuss. But we really do want to encourage all task force members to vote based on the information provided. And then what we will do is we will consult with the ONC, hopefully by next week, and come back with a finalized order of, again, we're looking for two or three additional domains that we are going to invest our energies into, as well as making time to go back and really fully clarify and agree on our recommendations for the earlier domains. So we'd hope to finalize that today. Clearly, we struck a chord, and we need to work through some of that additionally. So with that, I think our timing is good to shift to public comments, if that works for you, Lauren.
That works. Operator, can we please pull up the phone number and open the line for public comment, please?
Certainly. If you'd like to make a public comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue, and you may press star 2 if you'd like to remove your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys.
Okay, and while we're waiting for folks to join, just want to double back to make sure we didn't miss on the roll call. Leslie Leonard, Raj Ratwani, Ram, Scott Weingarten, Cheryl Turney, or Tina Esposito? Okay. Just making sure we didn't miss anyone. Okay, and then operator, do we have
and
anyone?
Cheryl's on the public comment, so she must be on.
Oh, thank you. Got it. Okay, operator, anyone in the queue for public comment?
We have none at this time.
Okay. So then I will hand it back to Ken and Stephen for any last remarks.
Thank you, Lauren. So again, I think we've got some additional time here, which is great, and we can focus in additionally on the prioritization questions. I see a public comment from Cheryl saying that she was unable to pull up the poll. I did post the link to the poll in the public comments earlier. I can repost that if folks can pull it up there. But the link does seem to work well. So again, we would very much encourage all task force members to register their preferences here.
And Stephen,
can I ask?
Sorry. Go ahead.
I just wanted to ask about the point that was made earlier in the call. Can we set up a separate poll to ask who's actually going to HIMSS and what might be a good time to meet up?
So there's two things there, and I think that was Jack. So there was a question that came up in the public comment as to whether we would reschedule the meeting that's during HIMSS. I don't think we have seriously considered that. I think we'd like to continue to go ahead and meet during the HIMSS week on the 12th of February. And the time for that meeting is set. I think that the question is whether we can arrange a room for that meeting with appropriate audio access for the group. And again, I was sort of hoping that between David and Sasha, one of them might be able to offer a conference room within their vendor space, but we'll see what comes of that. In terms of an additional meetup, is that what you were suggesting, Jack? More of a social meet and greet?
That was the meeting I was talking about.
Just the meeting. Okay, very good. Yeah. Go ahead, David.
Oh, I was just I'm wondering how many people might meet in person at HIMSS in terms of room sizing. Is it a dozen of us? Is 10? Do we any sense? Me, Sasha, Ken.
Yeah, I'll
Steve,
be there.
Even.
Yeah,
Andy,
there,
that's five.
This is Anil. I'll be there.
This is Clem. I will not be there.
This is Jack. I'll be there.
Seven.
Harry, I'll be there.
Eight.
This is Ricky. I'll be there.
This is Victor. Is this just for the regular meeting, our recurring meeting, or in the same time slot?
If some of us are in person for the regular meeting, how many would the in-person room need to handle? And it sounds like 10-ish. So I'll ask. I have no idea if we have a room that size, but I'll ask.
Let me just ask. This is Victor. If we actually want to, well, I mean, it sounds like we do have a lot of people who can meet. I have conflicts, so I won't be able to meet. So I was going to ask if it makes sense to schedule this during HIMSS at all. But if we can get a critical mass, then I'm all for everyone else meeting.
Yeah, it sounds like we've got a lot of folks who've said they're going to be there, and no one has expressed an unwillingness to meet.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I have a willingness to meet. I just can't.
Yeah, that's my situation too. This is Clem.
Yeah, this is Ed. I won't be able to join HIMSS.
So we're starting to hear a significant number of voices of folks who said they will not be able to meet on the 12th. So it sounds like perhaps we should consider rescheduling that. One thing that became very clear earlier in the call is that we're going to need additional time to work together to get through the work at hand. So one approach would be, instead of meeting on the 12th, to try to have two meetings in February, perhaps on the 5th and the 19th, to look at spending additional time working through the recommended changes to our earlier recommendations. Off the top, does anyone, especially from the ONC, object to that approach, kind of accelerating the frequency of our meetings to make sure that we can both finalize our work from last year and continue to move forward?
Yeah, certainly no objections from the ONC side. We just want to make sure that, you know, availability across the task force is amenable to that.
So I'm going to suggest, and we already had some task force co-chair meetings scheduled for the 5th and the 19th, that perhaps we skip the 12th because of the HIMSS concerns that have been raised, and instead try to schedule two meetings at an every other week interval going forward, so that we would come back next time, pick up our discussion of the 2018 work product finalization, and then hopefully by the latter part of February be ready to move on with our next domain. Any objection to that?
In that case, I would suggest a meetup.
Okay, I like that. I like, yeah, that's something more social that we could do at HIMSS. I think that's a very good idea, to meet people face-to-face. And we could potentially just stick with the same time, since some of us have already carved that out of our HIMSS schedules. That's a great idea. I suspect Don will be at HIMSS, and Steve and others, so we might be able to engage some of the ONC folks as well. Okay, well, hearing no objections, I think the proposal is that we will schedule task force meetings for February 5 and 19, virtual meetings like this one, and that on the 12th of February, for those who can meet in person,
will look to the 10 a.m. Eastern time to schedule a meetup. Lauren, we can work with ONC to see if you guys can provide a space or if we would look to one of the vendors to help us with that.
And Steve, this is Terry. That's in lieu of our 26th meeting, February 26th, or in addition?
No, we're talking about meeting on the 5th online, on the 12th in person for a meetup, not a formal meeting, and then on the 19th again online. Yeah, but what you're saying is that we already have a meeting scheduled on the 26th. So why don't we leave the 26th on the calendar since everyone's already got that. We can make the 19th tentative. We'll see how far we get on the 5th. Whether we want to meet on the 19th as well, we can determine that after our meeting on the 5th. How's that, Terry? It's a lot of meetings, but we've got a lot of work we want to do, and I'm certainly willing to meet if others are. Hearing no objections, let's plan for that.
And then just as a logistical note, the poll that we created was edit by anyone. We've updated to edit by login. So folks who've already voted and don't want to change it, no issue. Otherwise, we're just going to go ahead and send the invites to the emails that folks have registered. So it'll just take one more step, but that'll be forthcoming shortly.
Okay, and then just, this is Lauren, just one last additional note. I know there was a question about the draft recommendations that we were live editing earlier. Those will be made available public at one of our future task force meetings, so those will be posted eventually. Besides that, I know we have 5 minutes, so any other last-minute comments or questions or anything from the co-chairs?
I think since we do have a few minutes, if anybody else wanted to raise any questions about the five domains that we're discussing, medication pharmacy, evidence-based disease management, social determinants, prior auth, and price transparency, sorry, I read them in the order, a different order, this would be a fine time to, I think, address any questions there.
So this is David. I just wanted to say on Ken's proposal around the evidence-based disease management that it seemed to me that there were a couple of separable concerns that he talked about, one of which is, you know, kind of what clinical data should be captured for good care. I would suspect that's probably not our interest or our focus. The second is sort of how do you capture structured data that could be used to drive evidence-based medicine. And that would be a little bit of a how to use FHIR to capture the data and how to integrate it in the workflow and things like that. And I think that could be a topic of interest because there isn't a consistent way of doing structured data today. I think everybody interprets the Boink panels and other things somewhat differently. Some people use FHIR questionnaires. Some people use nested observations. Some people don't do it at all, blah, blah, blah. So that friendly amendment to Ken's proposal.
But could I just add to that, too? I think, you know, it's true there are slight different ways to put it in structures, but that's not as important as the fact of choosing different questions. And I think somehow we got to face up to the fact that it's a big industry. There's lots of people developing these forms, and we got to somehow get them to converge or get a
right.
convene something. Then I think it's not
a
problem.
Yeah, Clem, I was just suggesting decoupling those two so that the decision about what data to capture is a complicated space in and of itself, but how to do it once you've settled on the data is open for,
I'm on the questionnaire task force, and the questionnaire panel are just sort of how you cross your eyes. But I think it's a matter of what we're going to lay out. We at least need an example set and then talk about how we're going to put them out. Because otherwise, yeah, well, we just go in circles.
Yeah, need an abstract way to do nested structures that's deeper and better than the silly questionnaire resource. I think that's a pressing need.
Well,
it hadn't been solved yet.
I'd like to argue about whether it's silly, but that's a longer story.
Yeah, I think it is. pet peeve. Anyway, I think that's an area where we obviously have some discussion if we wanted to take that on. There are plenty of others.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you both. So, again, what we're doing is, in the background, we are retooling the poll to assure that only the task force members have the ability to edit their entries in the poll. We'll be sure to get that sent back out to everybody with today's meeting materials. We strongly encourage all task force members to register their preference as to how you feel your time and energies can be best invested going forward. At our next meeting, which is now going to be on the 5th of February in 2 weeks, we are going to go back and continue our discussion of the orders and results recommendations, and then hopefully move on to the recommendations regarding the closed-loop referrals and care coordination. If we don't get through that on the 15th, we will then, if we don't get through that on the 5th, then we will continue that discussion probably on the 19th and plan to start our next domain work on the 26th of February. Having said that, we're at time. Thank you, everyone, both the task force members and the public, for your active participation. We really appreciate it, and we will hopefully see some of you at HIMSS.
Sounds good.
Thanks, everyone.
Have a good one.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks, guys.